Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey, welcome, welcome. We're live on Pet Life Radio and here at Ask the Vet, Dr. Jeff. Here for your pets. So anything you want to talk about, now is the time because the advice is free. I don't charge for this time. This is my fun. So, hello, B. How you doing? You know, it can't be that bad if my own sister hops on. You know, someone's having a good time. Maybe I'm definitely having a good time. So in keeping with the idea that I want to kind of push the envelope a little bit, I want to be a little bit more controversial. Because some of these things, you know, again, understand. The good news is because I'm not in anybody's back pocket, I get to talk about my experience, what I think is right, what I do, what I like to do. Could I be wrong? Absolutely. Do I think I am? Of course not. At least for now, I think I'm doing all right. But this is where it's good to have a show like this because I would love, just like with insurance, you know, I was doing my thing and one of our listeners actually has had great luck with insurance. I said, that's great. I just said, that's the person who goes to Vegas and has that really good weekend. It could happen. So would I say everybody is going to have that? I don't think so. But anyway, so what I want to talk about today, you know, these are things that I get hit on all the time. So I get so many people coming in, clients coming in, and I'll tell you, the issue here is going to be pet food. They want to know what I think about certain pet foods. Why are you asking? Well, because I went to the pet store and the salesperson or the owner of the pet store told me what I'm feeding is terrible. And they want me to switch. I should switch to this or whatever food this is. Now, of course, that new food is going to be way more expensive, but they wouldn't be selling it otherwise. So I want to go through, first of all, I would love to know what criteria you use or have used to decide what food is good for your pet. And, you know, the first thing I say is this, you know, us telling our dogs or cats what they should be eating is like you telling me what the best ice cream is for me. And there's just too many out there. You know, one thing I always tell when it comes time to food, speaking the subject of pet food, et cetera, you know, I think I've heard this years ago. It might be a little different now, but one of the largest aisles, which means the most variety in a major supermarket, any guesses? No, it's not pet food. That's probably number two or three, is breakfast cereals. So now, can you imagine why, if there was only the best breakfast cereal, why would you need a full aisle with about 50, 60 different brands, varieties, sizes, et cetera? Because there is no best. And the same thing I say about pet food. There's no such thing as the best. So what criteria? And again, look at the options. Go into a pet store, not one aisle, several aisles. Why are all these foods there if there's only the best? Because there's no such thing as the best. And there's so many things you need to consider. So I kind of like work backwards. First of all, if you walk into a pet store and your pet is eating whatever he or she is eating and is doing well, don't switch. Period. Don't switch. Now, let's define well. What criteria should we as pet parents be looking at to determine whether our pet is eating the best food for him or her? Now, first criteria. Now, this simple. I'm curious to know what you think is, in your mind, what is the most important thing? I'll wait a minute to see, maybe throw me some answers. But I'd be surprised if you get my answer. And mind you, this is my answer. It may not be your answer, but the whole goal here is I want to give you some things to think about. I'm not here to ever tell you what you to do and not to do, et cetera, et cetera. I want to get your minds thinking about some of these issues. Let's hear what you have to say. If I said, what do you think the most important thing is when it comes to choosing a pet food for your pet? Got to come up with something. Okay, so one test, Steph says, real ingredients, not crude protein. Okay, all right, certainly that's going to be on my list, but that's not the first thing. Let's see, come on, think. I tell you, this is not a trick question. This is the easy question. This is the first thing that should come to your mind when choosing a food for your pet. All right, I see you're not engaging. So I'm going to give you my answer. They have to like it. I don't care what's in it. I don't care how good. I don't care the protein. I don't care the grains. If they are not going to eat it, it's not the best for that pet. They have to like it. So you're thinking about the ingredients and this, that, and the other. That's great. That's something. But you know, What decisions are you making? Those are things that you are anthropomorphizing and putting in your values into what your pet wants to eat. That's like the vegan and the vegetarian who is trying to make their pet a vegetarian. And we'll get to that in a minute. But the whole thing is, if they don't like it, who cares what's in it? I don't care if it's the best ingredients on the planet. They got to like it. Okay, so now we get that. So first of all, they like it. Second thing is, these are the criteria that it's not in a second, third, fourth. These are things that I look at. I will speak to an owner about and say, okay, what is it? So first of all, yes, they got to like it. If they don't like it, who cares? Secondly, do they have energy? Does it give them lots of energy? Thirdly, do they have a nice shiny coat? Fourthly, do they have a nice BM, bowel movement, normal stools, normal healthy stools? So my feeling is if they like it, they have lots of energy, they have perfect poops, they have a good stool, why are you even thinking about switching? Those are really good things. Now, that's the pet's perspective. Now that's about your perspective as pet parents. And again, the simplest thing is, how convenient is it? Does it fit your budget? I don't care how good it is if it's, $800 a bag. No, that's impractical. If you have to travel because there's one pet store on the edge of town 15 miles away, the only one that carries it. No, that is not an ideal pet for your situation, which is the reason why, because of all these little factors to consider, is why there are so many choices out there. So when I hear a client comes and tells me, they say they want to switch over to so-and-so food, I go, why? Is he having a problem with yours? And they go, no. He likes it. Yeah, loves it. And poops, good. Yeah, poops. Energy, good. You got all the important things made. You can afford it. Not too hard for you. No, I'll get it. This, whatever. Okay, now let's take the anthropomorphizing part. Now let's take the part where you are putting your own values into the pet food. Okay? So, and again, I'm going to say hi to everybody here. Hi. I'm waving. So then you want to look at the ingredients. How many are a lot of fillers? If you don't want fillers, I get that's good. You want a good solid protein. You want to make sure it's a protein that they can handle. Because a lot of dogs, and especially dogs that have food sensitivity, hypersensitivity, it is the protein. Grain is number two. So, and that's why we look for foods we call either single antigen, all right, diets, all right, and novel protein. So these are proteins that the body has probably never seen before. And therefore, it's unlikely they'll be allergic to it. But speaking of pet allergies, food allergies, and again, I have Frenchies. I know Frenchies. A lot of Frenchies have food sensitivity. But I will tell you that overall, only about 15, maybe twist my arm, 20% of allergies in dogs are food related. Get that? That means 80%, even up to 85%, when your dog has allergy, it's not food. So don't let the guy or girl at this pet store talk you into switching diets, all right? You need to know, first of all, what is the source of the problem? One clue I can give you, and again, as I always say, unfortunately, your dog or cat did not read the textbook, so they don't know how they're supposed to respond or react. But the classic, if there was such a thing, is the classic presentation of a dog with food allergies are, they have number one, attacking their feet, number two, their ears, and their face. They're rubbing their face, they're chewing, attacking their feet. And the reason why I make the distinction between just licking their feet and attacking their feet is I look at the foot itself. If the foot itself, if the hair is not discolored because of what we call saliva staining, if the webs in between the digits are not inflamed and erythematous, meaning red and irritated, the bottoms of the feet are not red and irritated, then I don't care if they're licking at the feet. And I always say to a client that I can almost look at a dog when it comes into the exam room and know whether it is attacking their feet, like allergy-wise, because a lot of times they'll come and say, he's licking his feet a lot. And I'm looking at these feet and they look goddamn good. And the ears look really good. And the face looks really good. I don't think this is allergy. So what do I think it is? So what do some people do to relieve their anxiety? What are two behaviors that we see to relieve anxiety? One, obviously, more so in adults. And the other one, certainly as little kids. Okay? Those of you that have children or had children probably know that the answers to two of these, and some of these from yourselves, you might know. What do some people do to relieve anxiety? It's a behavior, okay? And you want to take a guess? If not, I'm going to share it with you. Because dogs do it too, in a different way. All right? And my answer is, okay, no, it's not. As a little kid, yes, thumb sucking. As an adult, nail biting. So people bite their nails. It's some sort of anxiety relief. It relaxes them, okay? It's a stress mediator. Same thing with dogs that lick their feet. So if a dog is licking your foot, but it's not attacking, they're not saliva staining, they are not, their feet don't look red. If you were to look at the feet, you would have no idea they're licking the feet. That is probably not food allergy. Now, could it be? Yes, it could be. I'm just talking about the norms. So therefore, it's something to consider is when they're licking their feet, don't say automatically jump to food. So you go to a pet store and the owners of the pet store, the salespeople are always going to ask, what are you feeding? And they go, oh, you're feeding that stuff? Oh, that stuff is terrible. That's made, I mean, they're going to go to town on you. And like, are they board certified veterinary nutritionists? I doubt it. So use some criteria before you decide to start switching foods. Now, if you have an option of a number of foods, which you probably do, that satisfy the real criteria, they like it, they have good coat, they have good poops, they have lots of energy, you can afford it, it's some readily available to you, all of those, you're going to have multiple choices. So you really have to think long and hard, why are you switching? So now you say, because of your preferences, you want to put some of your preferences into the dog, which is, be careful out there. Anyway, then, yes, you want to look for raw ingredient, not raw food. We'll talk about that in a minute, but natural, healthy ingredients, no fillers. You want to do organic, you can do organic, whatever it is that makes you feel good, but you got to make sure that your pet like that food. And when you're switching, by the way, you do not want to do any abrupt switching. Because if you switch abruptly, you're going to get diarrhea. No, not you. Hopefully not you. But you'll be cleaning up your dog's diarrhea. So you got to go very gradually. I say you start with 20% of the new, 80% of the old by a day or two, then go to 60-40, then 40-60, until you keep increasing the new, decreasing the old. So at the beginning, you want to just do it clearly. Now, what am I causing tear stains, my poodle? Okay, now, so there's a different now. There, the tear stain is very much light, but it's not necessarily related to the diet. So Dr. Marty's is a good food. If he likes it and all the criteria, it's healthy, it's all the above, and he's doing well on it, don't switch. But tear staining, first of all, poodles are notorious for it. Usually it's the light color, it's the apricot, it's the white one, because you see it more. And there you want to just check, make sure next time your dog is under anesthesia for like a dentistry, have your veterinarian flush the tear ducts. Have them stay in the eye also and make sure there's nothing, no irritation, conjunctivitis. Because when there is, what happens is that they tear more. And when they tear more, the tear ducts can only handle so much. So the rest spills over the lid and you get that staining here. You could list them out, things out there. There is, you know, Eye Envy, there is Clear Eyes. But a lot of products. I don't know how effective they are, but I will tell you this. Yes, you're going to get diarrhea because you have to clean up all the diarrhea. But yeah, that's a good point. So anyway, yes, apricot. So it could be anything that's causing increased tearing, and it could be an environmental allergen, of course. So I would, again, have the eyes checked. It may be nothing more than just the dog and the fact that the light color, you're seeing it more. So it's freaking you out. But make sure that someone tries to flush those tear ducts because that can make a big difference. So, all right, hold on. We are going to take a quick break here on Pet Life Radio. So don't go away here. I'll mute Pet Life Radio so we can still talk a little bit while we're going through the commercial breaks, and we'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio. PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, we're back here live. So let's go back to raw. I promise you we'll talk about raw. All right, so raw food. A lot of people like raw food because they want raw food. And I caution against, this is right, I caution against what we call anthropomorphizing. That is taking your values and instilling them into your pet. I use this example all the time. Cats are obligate carnivores. Cats must eat meat or fish, animal protein. Dogs, however, can, let me underline that, can be vegetarian. Do they want to be vegetarian? I don't think so. Here's what I recommend for any of you out there that want it because you're veggie or you're vegan and you want to try to make your dog do the same. Here's just a simple test you can do at home. I want you to make your best vegetarian or vegan meal. I mean, say that your friends come over and say, oh my God, I can't believe it's a vegetarian. Can't believe it's vegan. All right, do that. And I want you to set a bowl down with that food. But alongside of it, I want you to set a bowl down of meat and hold your dog back. And all of a sudden, one, two, three, let him go and see which bowl he or she attacks. If she likes the vegan better, go for it. But my hunch is, and I've had many clients try this, they're going to go for the meat. So don't think that because you want to be vegetarian, that your dog needs to be vegetarian. All right. They weren't geared that way in their development, in their evolution. They were not supposed to. They were omnivores, yes, but they always got their meat. They hunted for meat. They weren't hunting the corn fields or the wheat fields or whatever to get the vegetables. They were hunting for meat. So keep that in mind. Now, if you want to feed raw, and again, I am not really against it, but I'm against pure raw food. So we have a lot of problems with E. coli. We have problems with salmonella. And we see this in greater incidence in raw diets. Now, what are the solutions? Well, there are a couple of solutions, a couple of options to stay with raw, if that's what you want. But one is we call HPP, high pressure pasteurization, or they call it high pressure processing. Instead of subjecting the food to heat pasteurizing, which destroys the nutrients, what they do, just so you know, after pasteurizing it, getting rid of all the bad things, they put the vitamins and minerals back in. So it's not like, yes, it's destroying the natural ones, but they're replenishing them with other vitamins and minerals, the ones that were destroyed. But if you high pressure, it doesn't destroy those. So that's one option. The other option, I think Dr. Marty says, is freeze-dried. So if you're freeze-dried, again, the quick flash freeze-drying, that will destroy the salmonella, that will destroy the E. coli, and it will sort of doesn't disrupt the balance and the nutrient value of the food, and it's fine. So Stella and Chewy's also, they do, I think they do both, some of their brands. So when you are looking at a food that's a raw diet, all right, make sure that the food was put through some process to eliminate the bad bacteria. Now, one thing that I notice a lot of, I work with a pet store in Santa Monica. They have an amazing, fantastic variety of foods, especially novel protein foods and single antigen foods. So I love that when we come to a dog truly a food allergy, they have many, many options. And a lot of their foods are frozen. So what I'm not sure, and I will check with some nutritionists, that if the food is frozen, and we're talking a deep freezer, will that maintain the vitamin mineral population but destroy the bacteria? So when that food thaws out to be eaten, it is almost like a flash freeze, but it's good old-fashioned freezing. So if that is good enough for them, then that's certainly good enough for me. The goal is you really need to be prepared and do something to prevent the bacteria. You see? Thank you, Steph. So Steph and her husband, Jeff, they have two cats, George and Walter. They did that. And well, of course, with cats anyway, cats really do need to have animal protein. You can make a dog a vegetarian if they so choose and are okay with it. But cats have to eat meat or fish. They have to have animal protein. That's why we call them obligate carnivores. Bunker Mallorca, he's on Hill's WD Multi-Benefit. I use that food for my dogs. Kibble, so they have to weigh his food so he can get the same amount each time. Yes, I mean, for sure. You know, that is a good food. You know, it's unfortunately, there are a lot of good brands out there that are getting a bad rap. And I'll give you a perfect example. Iams Yukonuba. Now, Iams was, I remember when my sister, who is on the show, unless she hung up on me, Bethany, I hope you're still here. I remember she got this magnificent, magnificent Doberman Pinscher years and years and years ago. And I remember she showed me, I wasn't a vet yet. I was just still a pre-vet. I was in school. And there was a guarantee from the breeder. But this guarantee is only effective if the dog is on Iams. I've never heard that before. They will literally negate the warranty if that dog had a different, and that was so weird to me. But what it shows you is that at that time, that Iams and Yukonuba were the cat's meow. They were a big competitor of Hill's. They were going to take over, right? So what happened? They grew, got bought over by Procter & Gamble. It was a big, big, big takeover. And now Procter & Gamble is a business company. So what did they start doing? They started selling Iams over the counter. And you can get it at the big stores, the box stores. You can get it at the market. Oh, now you walk into a pet store who used to can only get it at the pet stores. And they go, oh, that food is terrible. That's the worst. What in? A month ago, you were selling it here and said it was the best. They didn't change their formulation. It just tells you there's so much politics. They were just going to be, now they didn't own the right to sell it. It was, you can get it for cheaper at the market. And from the decision of Procter & Gamble to do that, of course they were going to do it. They didn't give a darn about that, the food percent. They just want the money. And they knew they would sell more food that way if they can offer it to more people, lower the price. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on like that. Some of these really, really good foods, only available through very exclusive pet stores, let's face it, are really expensive. So I know years ago, as a young veterinarian, I started doing my media and I started doing my lecturing. I was invited back to Topeka, Kansas, to visit the Hill's factory. And I got to tell you something. You could eat off the floors. It was so impressive. It was so amazing. When you hear somebody who just doesn't know telling you what's right for your dog, no, I have a problem with that. The only being that can tell you what's right for your dog is your dog. So if it's checking off all those criteria, everything's good, then that's fine. That's fine. And don't tell me that, I've been feeding my dog raw and now he's, 32 years old. That's not going to happen. So look, I feed my dogs another type of commercial food. It was a big Hill's competitor years ago. It's called iVet. I get it directly from the manufacturer. My dogs love it. They do really, really well on it. And my last Labrador, a Labrador, went 16 and a half years. My current Labrador is 13 and you wouldn't even know it. So we hear these stories after the fact about their dog and how long it lived on this diet and that diet. They didn't do a side-by-side study with an identical twin dog to prove that under the same environment, the same, and say, well, this dog ate this X and this dog ate Y, and look how much longer the Y dog lived. I mean, no, that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to do some scientific side-by-side, really studies to determine really is there that much of a difference. So I think so much is, I got to tell you another one. When I was sitting working with Iams, I did the same thing. One of my colleagues, Dr. Ernie Ward, we were invited to this whole roundtable discussion. And they were talking about the actual, just the morsels themselves. And they wanted to make them shaped like little dog bones. Why? Because the owner would think that's cute. The heck with the dog. Do you think the dog cared whether it was round or shaped like a bone? They don't care. But that tells you how much the marketing is. They're looking for things that the owner, seeing the packaging, will think, oh my God, that's so adorable. So anyway, all I can say is you're out there. Be careful out there. I would love to hear your comments. Let's hear from Bunkers. So thankful Bunker loves it. He loves the WD and it's good for his diabetes. Absolutely. You know, any other puppies for adoption? No, right now, no. From Sia, realtor. My dog is ex-cholo. I love those. Dry skin on his legs and paws can be caused by running around on grass and shrubs. Facial irritation, dry, scaly, other topical ointments for doggies. So the answer is yes. And I hate to push my product, but I have a spray called Dermamist. I also have one that is called my emollient spray. The emollient spray is like a moisturizing spray. And the Dermamist is antibacterial. It's called clohexidine and ketoconazole. Also antibacterial, antifungal. It's soothing. You spray it on, and you don't want to, things when you have a dog with dry skin, you don't want to necessarily put ointments on them because it goops them up. It actually impedes the airflow. You want to use something that is a non-alcohol base, but it is something it's spray on. And I think they tolerate it better and it doesn't leave as much of a residue blocking. Remember, dogs don't sweat like we do. Those hair follicles need to still breathe. That's my only concern. But Todd, waving. And there was someone here who wanted to join. Let me see. Possibly a dog who has been weaned too soon to display aggressive behavior when being fed. Seems like he wants to play and he growls to get your attention. So the answer, yes. If they become very, very food protective, then when you are there while they're around, my aunt had a dog who was the sweetest yellow lab on the planet, and you could almost do anything, but don't try to take a bullet away from this dog. He was a Labrador in every way except that. Then he became a Rottweiler. I'm telling you, he would attack if you went near him while he was chewing his bone. Now, so are there ways to train this? Of course there are, but you have to make it, again, fun. So when your dog is aggressive behavior while he's being fed, so what you want to do is hold the bowl full. You're about to set it down. Again, dogs have to learn to earn their praise. You ask your dog to sit and you give him, okay, a piece of meat, fresh meat, something that he likes better than that food. Okay, now you're about to put the food down. Wait, stay. And then you put it down. Okay, now while he's eating, you walk up to him and ask him to sit and show him the piece of meat that you have. And sit down, you start giving him the meat, you take the bowl away, all right? And then you give the bowl back to him. If you walk near him while he's eating, you have to let him know, he has to learn that he's gonna get something even better than what he's eating. And they usually, when you do this slowly and carefully, they will usually see you coming up to them while they're eating and they will sit, stop. Why? Because they want that piece of meat. And then you give them the meat, good boy, and then they get to go eating again. So that's how you train a dog slowly to tolerate you going near him or anybody going near him while he's eating. But he's got to get that reward. He's got to get that piece of meat. He's got to get something that he really likes even better than the food. And they will start letting you go near him while they're eating. Do I know everything? No, I don't. Why does a boxer live 13 years? The golden retriever on my 11? Right. So again, these are great questions. And the answer is, we don't know. So much of it is genetic. Boxers usually don't live as long. Golden retrievers, 11. Yep. My Labrador's 11, 12. I had one that was 13 and a half. One current one is 13 now and does not look like he's going to be leaving anytime soon. And then my last black, right, Grover, went to 16 and a half. So anyway, cast every tongue and keep my cat on budesonide for IBD. Well, you know, I like to slowly wean. Now, first of all, cats do better on steroids than dogs. There's no doubt about it. So we always joke with a cat, when in doubt, steroids. Now, would it be better to start weaning and maybe get to every other day or every third day? Absolutely. If you're on one, probably on once a day now. Now, if you're on twice a day, certainly go to once a day. Do that for about a week or two, then go to every other day. And now when you're doing cats on steroids, once a day and every other day, it should always be in the evening. With dogs, it's usually in the morning. And it's starting to meet their own rhythm of steroid release on the body. So that's what I'd recommend. I'm hoping you should be able to reduce the dose. You may not get to every other day, but let the cat dictate where he or she needs to go as far as the level and the frequency of the budesonide. It says, Pottery Alger wants to be in the video. If that is real, then let me know, because a lot of times people hit the view request and I accept it and they disappear. So, Christine Hart, how are you? I think I waved to everybody. So if they're, I did that every waving. I'm so sorry, Mama Sue, hello. Okay, good. I think we're good. All right, so here's the deal. I thank you all for joining me and I'm waving anyone I didn't want to miss. And love your questions. If there's any subject or anything that you want to talk about and you want to pick my brain, what's left of it, or you just want to hear some wisdom or lack thereof, depending on the subject, it could go either way, then I will love to hear from you. Just send me anytime. You can reach me here on Pet Life Radio or here on Instagram. Yeah, again, I love to talk pets. So anything that you want, any subject that you think would be helpful, and trust me, there are very few things that you might, that's a great question. Can I get ringworm from my rescued cat, even though she has no signs of disease? Absolutely. So sometimes just like a person, I had a ringworm, literally over 40 years of practice, I had it once. Do I touch cats with ringworm all the time? Yes, I do. So just like people, cats can build up their own resistance. So they may be a carrier and you might pet that cat. It could have, and all it takes is one little area. So if there is suspicion of a cat having ringworm, the only thing I can tell you is be careful, because it is contagious. But one thing you just to know for safety, in order for ringworm to affect anybody, a person, a cat especially, they has to affect or attack a hair follicle. So that means that don't be afraid to touch a cat, to apply some topical on the lesions, because when you use your hands and fingers, there are no hair follicles. On the back, yes, but not up here. So you cannot get ringworm. So you need to, if you use your hands, then you could just wash your hands and you should be okay, or use an antifungal before you touch something else, because you can carry it from one, or if you have it on your fingers, you don't wash it, and then you scratch your arm, yeah, you can get ringworm. So it's just a matter of being careful, but don't be afraid, because knowing that you can still apply a ringworm ointment, an antifungal, and these antifungals are the same stuff you can get for, you know, athlete's foot and things like that. Most of them are going to be the exact Lotrimin, ketoconazole, myconazole, anything you see in that section for athlete's foot and jock itch and all that stuff, it's the same. So you can use that as well. So yes, you can. So be really careful. But I would watch the cat just in case, and maybe have at least an antifungal bath and let the shampoo sit just in case, because it could be some spores there that affected you that have not affected the cat yet, but they may. So you want to try to get a hold of those. All right. We do non-anesthetic dental cleanings 1 to 2 times a year. Is that enough? Well, here's the thing. Years ago, I would have said yes. But what we're seeing now, there are a number of studies showing that when you do the anesthesia-free, there's no way you can get deep under the gums. So what you can do is you can do a thorough cleaning on the surface of the tooth, so much so that you get that false sense of security because the teeth look great. But Dr. Jan Bellows, who is a veterinary dentist, and Jan did the study and it was published. And he showed that the bone destruction after a few years of only non-anesthetic dentals was dramatic. And at the end, these pets lost more teeth because of bone loss, bone destruction, and the teeth started falling out, or they started becoming very mobile. So if you want to do it every other time, that's okay. But I would still, at least once a year, once every 18 months, you should get a full anesthesia dentistry. But even more than that, start brushing your pet's teeth every day, even every other day. But the best way to prevent the need for major teeth cleanings, even non-anesthesia, is home dental hygiene on a regular basis. And that means daily. So anyway, keep that in mind. Why does my dog random vomit clear yellow liquid? That usually happens early in the morning or after a long period of not eating. So it could be late night, early morning. And what I would recommend is feeding, when that happens with regularity, if it's once in a blue moon, don't worry about it. Otherwise, feed a late night snack. And prior to that late night snack, before you go to bed, so I tell people to take about a third or a quarter of dinner, set it aside, and maybe 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night, give about a half a Pepcid or Prilosec, depending on the size of the dog, talk to your veterinarian, and then about 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, give the remainder of that meal, that dinner. And when they have something, they do start with the Pepcid or the Prilosec, and then feed them, and they'll have something. You go to bed with something in their stomach, they should not have that same regurge, that gastric reflux, at sometime in the middle of the night or early morning. Try it. All right. I wasn't a raw fan, but it was always at work. And probiotics, I love probiotics, so that's a good thing to do. All right. I think we got everybody. I don't want to keep Mark waiting. I overstepped my welcome, as I frequently do. And I think I waved to everybody. If not, if I don't get to you or your question, that doesn't mean I don't love you. It just means that I missed them. So what you should do is be here next week, same time, same channel here on Pet Life Radio. And we will, and of course, Instagram Live, and we will get to your questions. And if you have something during the week you want to talk to me about, just send me drjeff@petliferadio.com, drjeff@drjeff.com, jeff@airvet.com. I have so many ways to get a hold of me, so just give it a shot. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.